Experts claim there is nothing tougher than a diamond. But at Diamonds Direct, we beg to differ. Have you ever met a mother? Strong, radiant, timeless. This Mother's Day, give her the gift that meets her match. With diamond jewelry starting at $200, plus Diamonds Direct's exceptional quality and unbeatable everyday price, you're sure to give her a gift that wows this generation and the next to come. Experience the thrill of jewelry shopping done right at Diamonds Direct. Diamonds Direct. Your love, our passion.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
We are actuaries. In a world filled with unpredictability, we use our math skills to navigate uncertainty. Actuaries make a difference in people's lives across industries and the world. Actuaries have the freedom to work anywhere. And according to U.S. News and World Report, we're the 25th top-paying career. Make an impact as a fact seeker and a truth teller. Use your math skills for good as an actuary. The world needs you.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to season 223, episode 3 of Der Daily Zeitgeist, a production of iHeartRadio. This is a podcast where we take a deep dive into America's shared consciousness, and it's Wednesday, February 9th, 2022. My name is Jack O'Brien, aka his name is Joe Burrow. He is kind of a dork. He is so ice cold. He's got Petey Davidson eyes. That is courtesy of Falcon Fuckhat. It is based on my theory that Joe Burrow and Pete Davidson have the same eyes. Not really a theory, observation, opinion, maybe.
That's a roast. That's a roast.
Not a roast. They're both like, I have a theory that like this is the direction that people seem to want hot dudes to head, is to kind of have those buggy Pete Davidson, Joe Burrow eyes in some cases. Anyways, I'm thrilled to be joined by that voice you just heard. Today's very special guest, co-host, an award-winning podcast host, a writer, podcaster, producer, voice artist, and even though it's not one of his written credits, one of my favorite singers, also my Wordle twin, although he's getting better. I think he's better than me now, so... Not so much twin, aspirationally my twin, and not, again, not one of his written credits, which I'm a little insulted by. It is Jaquice Neal!
And I sing because I'm Jaquice. And I sing because I'm Neal. His eye is on the side guy, and I know Jack watches me. Ooh, as my good friend Joe Rogan likes to say, what up, niggas? How y'all doing? Yes.
That was beautiful.
The N-word for me. And Joe Rogan only, baby.
Right.
That's how we do it.
Yeah, you said he's allowed to say it.
And, I did. You know, people, that part of the news cycle didn't
it's
come.
Cool. It's
you
cool.
know, they trying to, it's because it's Black History Month, they don't want me to be blamed for it. So I appreciate it, but I did give him the card. Let me shut up for, you know, the Black people that listen to the Daily Zeitgeist.
Yeah, yeah.
Come in my door.
Yeah.
We rolling up on Joe Rogan. We going to shoot him, y'all.
We're
going to shoot him with kindness. With kindness.
It's okay in Texas, right? That's allowed.
Is that where he is? Sure. He's in Texas?
I think he fled to Texas after being like, LA changed, and he was talking about Calabasas and like living in a on a compound where the only people he saw were like the weird white supremacists that he invited to his podcast. He was like, "What's going on? LA is different now."
Yeah.
Anyways, Jaquez, we are thrilled, blessed to be joined by the host of the wonderful new podcast, Like a Virgin. They are striking an intellect and wit, according to Las Culturistas. A queer champion, according to the New York fucking Times.
Ooh.
Please welcome the hilarious, the talented Fran Toronto!
Oh, why, thank you. Thank you for having me. God. I will say, without any context, this is quite a roller coaster ride of an introduction to a podcast. I feel like I know everything about y'all and also nothing. So,
yeah. I mean, you know,
this is amazing. Thank you.
I appreciate that. It's only when I'm here. I think this is only when the N-word is dropped on the Daily Zeitgeist.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that speaks for itself. But the thing that I wanted to comment on was, or rather ask, is what celebrities' eyes do I have?
Oh, that's a great question. Let's see.
If this is what you're going for, if you're trying to paint a picture for the viewer.
I mean, look, I'm seeing a little Freddie Mercury eyes. Little Freddie Mercury eyes, or maybe some Bruno Mars eyes.
Beautiful.
I don't know if this is insulting to you or not, but I mean it as a compliment.
Both are very flattering. Both are very flattering.
I was going to say my favorite stand-up comedian, Che Diaz.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I get Che Diaz a lot, honestly. Truly, like an insufferable Instagram narcissist, a Latin non-binary podcaster. I am suing, okay? Absolutely a plagiarization of my life and the podcaster to Hollywood Pipeline.
What the fuck?
Yeah, I get it. I was insulted for you, and this is the first time we've ever met.
Thank you. I'm here to hold Sex and the City accountable to that.
Please do.
Thanks for having me. That's why I'm here.
The Daily Zeitgeist, the heroes we need and deserve, everyone.
Yeah, we do like to front load just a lot of a lot of information out of context to just have our guests really off balance and our listeners just it's like hazing. We like to, you know, make sure that our listeners feel only the true heads last through the first 5 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Fran, are you watching? And just like that.
Are we watching?
Yes.
Oh, my God. Religiously. I'm not just watching, but I'm it's like appointment television. And I listen to not one, but two recap podcasts about and just like that every single episode. So I'm diving deep. You know,
because everybody who I know watches it hates it. I'm like, why are you watching it? I guess this is why we watch Euphoria too. So,
you know, enjoy. That's a complicated word.
It's a strong word.
I don't know if anybody would really be able to answer that question specifically.
Okay.
However, I will say it's very fun to talk about, and I have been unable to think about literally anything else.
Okay.
So, I mean, that at least it has in its favor and is a testament to the writing, I can say. I'm definitely on a ride, I guess that's what I will say. We talk about it a lot on Like a Virgin, so.
I love it.
I could talk about it for hours, but I'll spare you all.
Yeah. And let's give the listeners kind of an idea of what Like a Virgin is like beyond being a fan cast. What do y'all talk about?
Yeah, it's a mix of things. But me and my co-host, Rose Domu, we kind of like unpack pop culture from yore with a lens from today. So, you know, we'll take a deep dive into something like Buffy with a guest that, you know, is writing the book on Buffy. And we'll talk about what it meant to, you know, a kind of a group of people that see it as a cult classic. And then how we think about it today with like the Joss Whedon of it all, or like with the way that those actors were treated on set, or, you know, like deep diving into Harry Potter and then talking about J.K. Rowling's transphobia, things like that. And so our kind of goal is to just like take things that have long been in our cultural historical lexicon and I guess like talk about them in a modern context, but also just we're very irreverent and trolly and funny and we like to make fun of things. And so, yeah,
it's a great show. People need to go check it out.
Thank you.
Hell yeah. I love that.
Well, Fran, we are going to get to know you a little bit better in a moment. First, we like to tell our listeners a couple of the things we're talking about today. The Oscar nominees were announced yesterday morning. which means the Daily Zeitgeist will look back at the Oscar nominees from 5 years ago. I have a thing. I think that the Oscars should be given 5 years after the fact, so we get all the, you know, overexcitement and the Oscar campaigns out of our system and, like, see what movies lasted and had an impact. Mm-hmm. So we're going to talk about the nominees from the year 2017, celebrating the movies of the year 2016, and also the winners. And it's kind of a weird one because it's one of the very few times where I think most people agree they got Best Picture right.
Is that the Moonlight La La Land?
Yeah, that's the Moonlight.
Year?
It's the Moonlight La La Land. Like, they were so surprised that they got it right that they gave it to La La Land for a couple minutes. But yeah, so we'll talk about that. I'm going to pitch a couple new categories for the Oscars because they're always talking about, like, we need to make this more fun to watch. And their only strategy seems to be nominating Marvel movies for Best Picture, or, like, that seems to be the only thing that anyone's really proposed in the mainstream media. So I want to talk about, like, categories that might be fun. And then we will do a quick look at this year's noms. We're going to talk about banned books, Mouse being banned and seeing its sales skyrocket. We are going to talk about the new horny Build-A-Bear. Hopefully, yes, we will get to that because it's not as horny as it needs to be.
Mm-hmm. And we love sex.
My opinion. We are a sex-positive podcast, mm-hmm, especially when it comes to Build-A-Bears.
Yeah.
Always been our policy. But before we get to any of that, Fran, we do like to ask our guest, what is something from your search history?
Ooh. Oh, I have been binging America's Next Top Model for the first time. And the last thing I was on was J. Manuel's Wikipedia page. He's the makeup artist and creative director. He's kind of one of the three, like, hosts of the show. Do y'all watch America's Next Top Model, or have you watched it before?
I did a reality show podcast last year, and one episode was dedicated to America's Next Top Model, the Tyra Banks screaming episode.
Tiffany, be quiet, Tiffany.
Yes.
It's amazing. It's so funny to watch the show now because, like, if it were made today, it would be shut down immediately. But, like, it really did invent an entire genre of reality TV. So I have been just retroactively, I guess, deep diving into things like J. Manuel.
Love it.
What are you learning about J. Manuel?
Well, I had no idea that he was biracial, first of all. I just thought he was, you know, got that L.A. tan or something. I thought maybe he was Mexican, which he's not. And so, yeah, his parents survived apartheid and he was, I guess, adopted in the United States. So much from his background that I didn't know about. But I was also learning that, like, he was Tyra's makeup artist forever. And that's how he got the gig. And he originally wasn't supposed to be a part of the show. He was just going to do Tyra's makeup. And then he, you know, inevitably got folded into the what it is today and was such a natural part of reality TV. So I thought it was I love learning about it, even though the show is so, so problematic now.
I bet. I mean, because what was that? Like 2000, like early 2000s, right? Like 2003, four, somewhere around there is when it started.
It's wild. We're going to do a whole episode on it, on, like, a virgin. Yeah. But, like, the level of, like, absolutely unhinged things that they did to these girls, psychological warfare, honestly, to these 18-year-old girls, and a lot of gaslighting needed to kind of, like, convince them that what they were doing was completely normal.
It gamifies, like, all of the problematic things about the modeling industry and, like, makes it into a game where that's how you win. And that's, I watched one season because a friend of mine was a contestant and she did well, but she, you know, bailed after she got knocked out and never did any modeling or anything. She became a lawyer, but
good for her.
That's definitely, I don't know if becoming a lawyer is good for anyone, but she seems happy. Yeah, exactly. Probably a little bit more stable. But it is, you know, they're just straight up talking about the things that people are like, should the modeling industry be this way? And they just straight up, like, make it into a game, right?
Yeah, it's wild. It's absolutely bizonkers. But bizonkers. That said, excellent television.
I mean, that's why we watch reality TV. We want We don't, I mean, you know, look, if it wasn't no drama, if it wasn't no, if it wasn't any shit that we would be like, whoo, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
We wouldn't want to watch it. Right, we wouldn't want to watch it. We would watch American Idol.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Which even American Idol is kind of problematic in many ways as far as they treat like their talent. At least it used to be back in the day. So
justice for Jennifer Hudson, honestly.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah.
We're going to talk about the Oscars later. Justice for Jennifer Hudson again.
Yeah.
Oh, she didn't get nominated for Aretha. That's right. That's right. Wow. Damn. Damn. How dare they?
Does American Idol still do the thing where they like have the person on who's struggling with a mental health crisis and then the judges just like kind of smirk through it? Is that still happening?
God.
Probably. I haven't watched American Idol since Taylor Hicks. Shout out Taylor Hicks.
Wait, yeah, I think me too. I think that was also my last
that
season.
Was the last season.
I'm not sure. Maybe that was just the last season, period, and we actually don't know.
Yeah, we don't know.
We really have way of verifying whether or not that was the last season. So I guess we'll never
History
know.
We'll leave it there. You know? We'll leave it there. Taylor Hicks, the last American Idol.
Did Taylor Hicks win?
He did win.
Yeah, he was. Is that why you guys stopped watching as a protest of Taylor Hicks winning?
I actually like Taylor Hicks. I mean, there were more talented people on that season who have had a career beyond Taylor Hicks had a career. But I like Taylor Hicks, old, like, really can't sing, but is really entertaining, old gray head, salt and pepper. I fucked with Taylor Hicks, but he was not the best one. He should have been eliminated, like, week 8.
Right. Yeah. I'm from Chicago and we used to watch that as a family. And so, oh my gosh, no way. Okay. So, like, really, the person who wins American Idol is usually the one with the most Midwestern appeal or like middle of the country appeal.
Oh, that makes
Anyone
sense.
That's not in New York or LA, like, that's the person that wins American Idol.
Yeah.
And I feel like Taylor Hicks was the kind of most palatable star that could have come
Absolutely. Out of that season. Because he was up there singing, easy like Sunday morning. Boy, I got everybody. My grandma was like, ooh, Sunday morning. Ooh, let me listen to this church man. He wasn't, you know, she don't know the song.
Fram, what's something you think is overrated?
I was noodling on that. I really couldn't think of anything this morning that was overrated except for urinals. I think that urinals are an unfinished idea. I don't really know why we use them. When you go to pee in a urinal, it splashes back on your pants, bro. Like it's totally gross. It only saves you a few seconds of time. But like, I think that like efficiency culture and like how we've like been taught to like make the most out of like every second, it's like so asinine, and it's so much more relaxing to just sit on the toilet and piss. Oh. Just piss sitting down. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Now listen, I'm with you, Fran, on the peeing sitting down. I am an advocate. If I'm at the crib, my ass cheeks hitting the toilet seat as much as they possibly can. But if I'm in the public,
that's just general policy.
That's just general politics. But if I'm in the public, everybody else peeing on that toilet seat, I don't know if I'm trying to sit on male privilege because we don't have to sit down on every toilet seat when we use the restroom. But I do agree with you. Urinals are
an unfinished idea. Such a great way of putting it. They never.
Honestly,
they just like. Put it, they came up with the idea in theory and then put it in every restroom around the world and never took another look at it.
If you had never heard of it before and someone said, you're going to piss on this hole in the wall right next to someone else. Like, I would never want to do that. And like, yeah, I mean, brown kid culture, yeah, we're taught, like our moms teach us to hover over the toilet seat, but like your ass is already dirty.
That's true.
Just, you know, bring little wipes everywhere you go. You'll be fine. I'd much rather sit down.
I don't know if you know this, friend, but I'm known around these parts as the cleanest ass in America. You know what I'm saying?
He takes so much pride in it.
He takes so much pride in no germs being on my cheeks.
Yeah. Oh, wow.
I also think urinals, this is probably a stretch, but I also think the actual urinal, too, is a product of just dudes being toxic a little bit. Like to say,
I agree.
Because you're from Chicago. I don't know if you've ever been to Wrigley Field or not.
Oh, yeah.
But But so you know, those bathrooms used to be a big ass open bucket where everybody
a trough,
which is what I think they used to be before they became urine. And people were just like, I'm touching elbows with this person, and people looking down at my junk, and so they tried to separate them instead. But I think a trough is even better because it's way down.
Yeah,
it's basically like you're pissing on the ground.
No splashback.
No splashback. I think we should go back to all troughs.
Let's go back to troughs. Troughs for everything. Troughs for every bathroom experience.
Yes. Great. Yes.
Awesome. We're so good at ideas.
I feel like the urinal cake industry is what's keeping urinals around. Urinal cake and those like plastic things that they have to put there to like doesn't remove the splash, but I guess it like cuts back on it.
Yeah.
So it gives
hole to aim at.
And it and also, you know, makes the piss smell like, you know, like a clean piss.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Which is always nice.
Come on.
Wow.
What a great overrated.
That is an all-time great overrated. What is something that you think is underrated?
Underrated. You know, I don't want to insult this cultural entity by calling it underrated, but I will say not enough people are watching Abbott Elementary. Have y'all heard of this show?
Abbott Elementary is one of my favorite. First of all, yes, black sitcoms are back and it's beautiful. Abbott Elementary is truly one of my favorite new shows that I've seen in a long ass time. Comedy.
It's so good. Have y'all talked about it on the show already?
We haven't, no.
It's amazing. I mean, basically the gist is it's a Philadelphia like elementary school that is kind of Parks and Rec / The Office style mockumentary. And all these teachers are just basically trying to improve the education of these kids in very funny ways. And it kind of exposes and pokes fun at how underfunded literally all schools are and how they don't have the budget to do anything. And it's, I mean, like to a comical degree that they have to like go to great lengths to try and get these kids, you know, new rugs or like a gifted program or things like that. Yeah. What do you think about it?
First of all, it's office-like, but with black folks centered in the middle, which is really cool to see. And the thing I love about it is the writing is so specific and so funny. And everybody on that cast is eating.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody. Janelle James is fucking eating. Mm-hmm. Tyler Christopher, I always forget. Tyler something Williams. Yeah. I should know that. Everybody loves Chris or hates Chris. Tyler, he's fucking eating. Like, he's a genius. His deadpan look. Everybody on that show. If multiple people don't win Emmys on Abbott Elementary, there's a flaw in the system because they're all so good as a cast and ensemble. And that's what I love most about it is the ensemble is very strong and mixes so well together that I think it's one of the best shows in the new, you know, freshman class of TV. Tyler James Williams. I have to call that man Tyler Christopher Williams.
I mean, yeah, this show is incredible. It also has, even though there's no explicitly queer characters, it has a queer appeal because Chessie from The Parent Trap is in it.
Mm-hmm.
And Chessie was, you know, a lesbian awakening for so many baby gays back in the day. And she looks exactly the same. And her character is so funny, too. But yeah, just as you were saying, like, every character is so rich. And it also digs up these archetypes from your past life that you never thought about. Like the school nurse. And like their deal and like how they're so over it, you know, like it there's such funny archetypes in this school, you know, from the principal to the janitor.
Yeah.
And I just like, it's nonstop fun. Every joke is funny and the casting is sublime. It's so good.
Watch it. Watch it, everybody.
Mm-hmm. Damn. It definitely feels like it's getting a lot of love from, it's definitely on my list. I just haven't taken the time to like put it into my DVR, but it definitely feels like it's getting the sort of love that like the prestige, like HBO shows, like the people who are usually talking about those shows are talking about this. Which I mean, that's big for a network. I feel like networks, not just this year, but like it's been a while since they kind of hit one that everybody was like, yes.
That's why I said underrated, because I was like, anything on network television, like people aren't watching that.
Yeah.
So, you know,
it's super underrated, but a lot of people are starting to, it's getting that word of mouth. Mm-hmm. And again, I want to take your underrated just a little even further and say the black sitcom Grand Crew is great. Mm. Abbott Elementary is so good. There's a lot of really dope Black-led sitcoms that are coming back to the forefront this freshman year and in their freshman year of seasons. And it's pretty dope to watch. It's really dope to see networks giving the Black sitcom a chance again, because it's very weird that in the 90s, when I was a child, there was more Black television like and more than there was from like 2000 to 2020.
Yeah.
And that was so weird to me. We went backwards in a very weird way. So it's really dope to not only have like a show that like was written by a Black woman that's succeeding, but it's on ABC and it's getting play. So shout out to them.
Oof, yeah. Love that. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about the Oscars.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often those of us who don't fit into this dumb stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the My Cultura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but...
same old us. Oh,
yeah. And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed, and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Elliot Connie, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true. And I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things and thank you for overcoming them.
Wow. Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And the Oscar nominees are out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, well, everybody's talking about who got in, who got out, who snubs and flubs and all that shit from this year. I do like to look back 5 years ago. This is an idea that I think I stole from Bill Simmons, the sports writer, who got the idea basically from like the sports world. Like when there's a Hall of Fame ballot, they don't just immediately, like once a person retires, be like, well, they go into the Hall of Fame, because, you know, you're too emotional and you just, you don't have perspective yet. Mm-hmm. And like, I feel like even if it's not the Academy Awards that ends up doing this, I do feel like a Hall of Fame for movies that like goes 5 or 10 years in the future or in the past for each year would be fun. And you wouldn't get your Green Books coming through.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Did Green Book win? Green Book won, right?
Yeah, Green Book won like 2 years ago or 3 years ago. Like Green Book won after Moonlight.
Yeah, right after Moonlight. It was such a slap in the face.
That's right. Even though I love me some Mahershala Ali, I think he is one of the best in the industry right now. Green Book was whack.
Yeah.
Green Book was whackety whack. We should be, you know what, not to jump the gun here, but I do think we should be able to take nominations away. Like after a few years, after we look, you know how they always be like Academy Award nominee. We should be able to take that damn tag away after a while. Be like, you know what, we thought about it.
Yeah.
That shit wasn't an Academy Award nominated worthy.
And if you want to keep your union card, you have to come to the ceremony where it's being taken from you and given to somebody else.
honestly, we should be able to give retroactive nominations to people. Absolutely. Because let me tell you, Jennifer Hudson, J-Lo deserves one for Hustlers. Okay. Yeah. Like, I think Toni Collette needs one for Hereditary. I think a decade from now, we should give one to Gaga for House of Gucci, honestly.
Yes. We're still going to be watching it. We're still going to be talking about it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Long-ass 3-hour movie we're going to watch just for Gaga.
Yeah.
And also, and to be clear, today, we understand she didn't get nominated. We understand, like, she didn't get nominated today. But 10 years from now, once we live with this, we're going to be like, oh, that shit was dope.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. You get
Who
it.
Who cares about the accent? Who cares? Yeah. Which they also said about Benedict Cumberbatch. For they said, who cares about the accent? But they still gave him an nominee.
Yeah, his accent was terrible. Terrible.
I always say he sounds like Hans Gruber in Die Hard when he's trying to do an American accent. When he's like, my name is John Gray. There are moments. Like, it's a great performance. I'm not saying he shouldn't have been nominated. I'm just saying if you're going to get all picky about accents, fuck out of here.
Yeah.
I didn't watch that movie. I didn't watch, what was it, House of Dogs? I didn't watch it. It looked boring as hell. It's white people. It is boring. You got to catch me on a good day to watch that.
I thought it was I think it would have been more successful as a short film. That's what I think. I think it was really, really gorgeous and perfectly constructed. Like it's masterful filmmaking, but I just think it should have been a short film. And I don't understand why. I mean, spoiler alert, that Benedict Cumberbatch is like a closeted homosexual and like, that didn't get folded into the story at all, really. I mean, kind of did, but like, I don't know. I think there were some things about it that I didn't love, but I understand why it's Oscar bait to the max.
Yeah, it's bait. It's 100% bait. But anyway,
Kristen Dunst, she ate.
Yeah.
But it's like dominating the awards. Like they gave it to Plemons. Like Plemons, it's Plemons just being Plemons.
I love Jesse Plemons.
I do too.
Everything I see him in, not everything, but most things I see him in, I enjoy. He plays his role very well. Also, I think it's dope that a couple got nominated. They both got nominated for the first time. He's married or dating. I don't know if they're married or not. To Kirsten Dunst.
So. Oh, no way.
That's dope. Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't know that either.
Oh, that's so sweet.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty. I thought that was dope. I thought that was pretty cool to see them both be excited about getting nominated for the first time.
And it's definitely a performance where you're not like, oh, they're definitely fucking, like when you're watching it, it does not scan that way at all. But that's a good performance. But anyways, I want to talk briefly for my selfish theory that we should be talking about movies 5 years ago. So this is the one where they got the best picture right. Moonlight won, but I feel like there are lesser fuck-ups kind of all over the place. Like, so Molly Shannon in Other People. Have you guys seen Other People?
I love that movie.
And she's so good in it.
Stunning.
Mm-hmm.
And wasn't even nominated for Best Supporting Actress, which Viola Davis won for. But she was the best actress. Like, she was straight up, like, all over that movie. She was definitely the lead in Fences. So, like, yeah. just put her in the lead actress category.
Agree.
And that's who wins best actress instead of...
Yeah. Oh, she gamed the system that year. She was like, you know what?
But she could have
Might win Best Actress, but I'm definitely going to win Supporting if I can.
Yeah, for sure. That's it. Is that the Academy actually, she knew that they just needed to take out three of her lines and then she would qualify for supporting. Right. She's like, could you please just edit out three of my lines?
Yeah.
God.
Yeah. So Chris Kelly, I thought, should have been nominated for Other People, who is the co-creator and co-writer of The Other Two, which is... one of the best, I say underrated shows of the past couple of years.
Agreed.
Hacksaw Ridge this is the year that that everybody was like, let's let Mel Gibson off the hook and give him a fucking Oscar nomination.
Yeah, nominated that year.
Feels like every year, honestly.
All over the place.
What the fuck? It's very weird, too, because like that was I generally watch the Oscars, but the reason I'm so like, I don't know much about this one, that's the one I didn't watch. And I was in a bar when the Best Picture nominee went down for this. And, like, everybody, like, tuned in and was like, La La Land won. And then everybody just went back to their drinks. And then, like, 2 minutes later, like, we were hearing commotion. It was like, yo!
But, yeah, I don't need Mel Gibson nominated for Best Director, which was, a surprise at the time. People weren't like, this is the best directed movie. It's just... you know, Mel Gibson blowing people up and making gross shit happen to human bodies. Loving by Jeff Nichols. I feel like Jeff Nichols, just in general, really good director who hasn't been nominated. Mm-hmm. So I have a wild card for both 5 years ago and this year. For supporting actor, Ralph Fiennes in Hail Caesar was just like so like an unforgettable scene for me. Like, that scene just like sticks in my head, just everything about his performance. He's only in it for like a couple scenes, right? Like, but I don't know if that needs a separate category or if we just have like a best scene,
best
like,
cameo,
best cameo. That's a dope ass. That's a dope, because cameos are becoming, especially, you know, with the Marvel movie forefront,
industrial
that we've been
complex
in the past 15 years. Cameos are it.
There should be an award for did the most with the least.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I would love that.
Like, yeah. I think this year's example is Bradley Cooper in Licorice Pizza, like, is only on screen for like 3 minutes, but is just so like, he just takes over the movie in a, and he's playing Barbara Streisand's husband, like a real Hollywood producer.
So weird.
Who's like a monster. And it's a real, like, it's just watching, like, a force of nature, like, passes through this movie that's like somewhat unrelated, but you can't stop thinking about it even when he's not on screen. Waiting for him to come back.
I'm never going to watch that movie, but I almost did because the trailer convinced me that it was some sort of Barbara Streisand, like, you know, coming of age biopic. And I was, because I didn't perform even a cursory Google. And I was like, oh, I would see that. And then, you know, I Googled and I was like, wait, this is about an adult woman who wants to fuck a teen, like wants to like date a teen, and the whole premise is that
there is.
I just like don't. I was like, I'm gonna pass on that one. Yeah. But cute name, and I love Haim. Love Haim.
It'll be a cold day in hell before I watch Licorice Pizza. I'll watch Roots again before I watch Licorice Pizza.
I think Licorice Pizza should. Like, that's the one that made me think we should have a best trailer category, because the trailer for that, first of all, I didn't realize until I, like, listened to Life on Mars, like, in its entirety, that basically Life on Mars is the plot of the movie for the most part. Like, he just listened to Life on Mars and then wrote a movie, and it's just a great trailer that, like, that movie, nor most movies, is able to live up to, but... I think a best trailer would be a fun category, and you would get to watch it while you're watching the broadcast.
I love that. I love best trailer, because they actually do need to bring a couple more categories Because there's always like 3 days of the Oscars. There's the two that we don't see, where they give right. all the awards that they know don't nobody want to fucking see. given. And right. then the like they have the actual ceremony. Yeah, yeah, then they have the actual ceremony. I would love a trailer category, but trailers got to go back to what they was in the 90s.
You need a voiceover.
You need yeah. the voiceover. You need
best performance by a voiceover yeah. trailer guy.
Yeah.
If we were to offer nominations for best trailer, I would say Across the Universe. Do you remember that Beatles movie?
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
just
yeah.
one yeah. long music video, terrible movie, but like an amazing trailer. So like yeah. such an exciting conceit for a movie, even though it's like so average. But I also have to say, if we were to offer a did the most with the least, Drew Barrymore should have a nom for Scream, because yeah. that yeah. is one of the most phenomenal things she's ever done in her acting career, period.
Yes. I just saw the new Scream like last week or something, mm-hmm. and the person I went with, I guess, forgot, because I thought, I don't want to spoil it, but I thought they were going to do the same thing in the beginning of the movie. I guess that is a spoiler. Who gives a fuck? If you haven't seen Scream.
It's the beginning, so.
It's the beginning. I thought they were going to do the same thing. And they was like, well, no, she's a star. And I was like, well, Drew Barrymore was a star. yeah. When she yeah. got murked Excuse in the first me. 5 minutes of that mm-hmm. movie. And that shit yeah. was like revolutionary, because especially in our age, we weren't used to that. Mm-hmm. Like, we yeah. weren't used to stars getting killed in the first. We still aren't. Like, I remember yeah. when the other guys did it with The Rock and Sam Jackson, and it was so funny because yeah. you thought they were going to be in the whole movie.
That was dumb. Yeah.
And, like, it's such a really good trope that doesn't get used often, but the people who it does get used with generally are fantastic in those, like, 3 to 5 minutes there in the movie.
Did you think it was going to do the same thing because it has the exact same title as the previous movie?
It yeah. has the exact same title, so, and it starts pretty much exactly the same.
Yeah.
It starts exactly the same. It was great, though. I did love the new Scream. I thought it was fun.
I think a lot of work could be done in the best original song category from 5 years ago. La La Land had 2 songs
Shameful.
Nominated. Moana had 1, didn't even mm-hmm. sniff the award. And You're Welcome. Like, they gave up the opportunity. So You're Welcome. I have a 3-year-old and a 5-year-old. So, like, I listen to a lot of Moana soundtrack. But You're Welcome yeah. is a fucking jam. It really
holds up. Oh, it's a jam. It's a bop.
And they could have had The Rock
yeah.
rapping at the Oscars. Like, that's how you get people to watch the Oscars. Is yeah. like, I don't know. And then there's, like, some visual effects stuff, like Jungle Book won for that. I feel like in retrospect, with the live action Lion King under our belt, we recognize that maybe that's not the path for movies to head down as much. But I don't know. And then I think like a new category that would be fun is like in camera special effects. Like if you just did like the best like practical special effect, and then they like showed you how it was done in the category, like during the show, that would be fun. But yeah,
I have to say, how is this? I mean, what we're talking about when you're talking about like soundtrack, how is this Beyonce's first Oscar nom?
Right.
Yeah. What? Yeah. I thought she yeah. was halfway to an EGOT already. Like, I'm so confused.
Yeah.
But yeah, I also feel like, you know, Encanto like was one of my favorite movies, but the music was not good.
And, yeah, the music wasn't great.
Yeah, but like
if I don't remember any of the songs.
Yeah, if they were to nominate a song, it should have been We Don't Talk About Bruno, which is now like a TikTok sensation.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah, I agree. There's a lot of, you know, retroactive work to be done in this yeah. category.
The music one is a tough one for me because it's very weird. Like, all right, so, you know, if we go back in the 5 years, most categories should have more nominees. It shouldn't be capped at 5 because, you know, obviously you're going to get snubs. That's how it is and everything. But some of the snubs are just outlandish, mm-hmm. like which is wild. So I think you should just have like 7 to 10 like they did for the Best Picture when The Dark Knight didn't, you know, get nominated. And that's why they changed that category up. But for the actual songs, we should 100% go back and take away, like, the Oscar nomination for some songs. Because, like, some of them songs don't hit, man. Some of them songs don't hit no more. Some yeah. of the songs don't hit.
No, they don't.
They don't matter. But some songs do hit, like the Bruno. Like, that shit's going to hit. It's going to be popular in 2 years. You mean to tell me that's not an Oscar-worthy... What else? We ain't going to the movies to listen to songs. So if a song hits and it stays popular, that's an Oscar. That's a fucking Oscar.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then this is a controversial opinion that I don't even know if I believe in. But so if they want to like really get these like movies that everybody saw involved, what about a separate category that's not Best Picture? It's just Best Movie. Like kind of having a separate sort of category that's just like, all right, this isn't necessarily art, but it's like the most fun people had at the movies. So just looking at 2016, you had Finding Dory, Zootopia, The Force Awakens, Moana, Arrival, Captain America, Civil War, Deadpool. Like those are all pretty iconic movies.
I'm shocked that Arrival wasn't nominated. That's crazy. I love that the rest of them are children's movies, though. You really are. Right. You really are. You have kids. We get it.
We got to Jack.
I mean, I love that. The only thing is, it would only be Marvel movies. And
especially
like,
now.
They're making, especially now. I know. They're making so many a year, too. Would be like so many Marvel. I mean, the Spider-Man movie was my favorite movie of the year, period. Listen. More than any of these noms.
I tweeted this today, actually, and I generally don't like to have debates with internet strangers about my opinions or theirs because I don't give a fuck. But I wrote that if Don't Look Up was nominated, then Spider-Man No Way Home should have been nominated because that movie, not only did I liked Don't Look Up. I'm not shitting on the movie, but I thought Spider-Man No Way Home was a better movie almost in every way. The story was better. The action was better. I had more fun in the movie.
Acting was better.
The acting was better. Like, in every way, that movie was better.
Every joke was good. And let me tell you, Don't Look Up, that, like, tepid, like, Netflix algorithm generated, like...
Yeah.
Like that, the function of that movie was nothing but like performance on Netflix's streaming service. It was so transparently like, I don't know. It took me 3 sittings to finish that movie because I kept getting up and being like, I don't really know what I'm watching. I don't know what the appeal of this is outside of the fact that it's had so many stars. I thought Cate Blanchett was awesome. I thought actually Jonah Hill was really fun. But the movie in general, I was just like, I totally agree with you. I was like, I don't understand why this is nominated. Yeah. I mean, actually, I do. It's because, you know, the devil works hard, but Netflix's publicists work harder.
And
they will get Emily in Paris all of the awards. They can do that for Don't Look Up too, let me tell you.
Well, it sounds to me like you are both climate deniers, climate change deniers.
Oh, yeah, man. Absolutely.
Unless you thought it was the best movie of the year, you just don't understand the message and you hate the environment.
Hey, man, I don't see no comments coming near the
I'm good over here.
Talking about. Can I say one more controversial thing about 5 years ago, Oscars? First of all, let me preface it because, again, people on the internet are dumb and they don't read context. Moonlight should have won. Should have won. But it was only after that debacle where people start acting like La La Land wasn't a good movie. I had a good time watching La La Land. Like, it was okay.
It was a great movie.
I'm not saying it was like it was not a Best Picture nominated. But I think after that was over, hive mind of social media kind of like dictated, oh, and now we also hate La La Land. Like, y'all motherfuckers was up here tap dancing in the streets and singing all the songs and shit before the Oscars came out with that movie. Y'all liked it. It was okay. I think the hate that La La Land got for that fuck up after the fact, it's a little whack, in my opinion.
It's honestly just wrong time, wrong place for that movie.
Yeah,
it was just, it's a stunning movie, movie about a guy who, you know, likes to mansplain jazz to an aspiring actress.
Exactly.
As most movies are about that.
Exactly.
And I felt like, you know, it was gorgeous. Wrong time, wrong place. And it entered the culture wars of that year.
All right. Since you guys called me up for being kid movie focused, I won't go into my 15-minute bit about how Cars 2 should have retroactively been given all the Oscars. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back and talk about Build-A-Bears.
Yeah.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. Now, this is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. If you ever felt like you were always too much this while also never being enough that, this is the podcast for you. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more via my own personal stories, along with interviews with inspiring thought leaders from our community. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community that you need to know. So much of what makes our community so beautiful is our diversity, yet too often, those of us who don't fit into this dumb, stereotypical box of whatever it means to be Latino are left without a voice or just forgotten about. On this show, I celebrate the uniqueness of our culture and invite you to walk in your authenticity. Listen to Life as a Gringo as a part of the Michael Tura Podcast Network, available on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Tamika D. Mallory.
And it's your boy, my son, the General.
And we are your hosts of TMI. New year, new name, new energy, but
same old us.
And catch us every Wednesday on the Black Effect Network, breaking down social and civil rights issues, pop culture, and politics in hopes of pushing our culture forward to make the world a better place for generations to come. But that's not all. We will also have special guests to add their thoughts on the topics, as well as break down different political issues with local activists in their community. If you like to be informed and to expand your thoughts, listen to TMI on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
That's right.
I'm Ilya Kani, and this is Family Therapy.
My best hopes, I guess, identify the life that I want and work towards it.
I never seen a man take care of my mother the way she needed to be taken care of.
I get the impression that you don't feel like you've done everything right as a father. Is that true?
That's true, and I'm not offended by that.
Thank you for going through those things, and thank you for overcoming them.
Thank God for the limits.
Every time I have one of our sessions be positive. It just keeps me going.
I feel like my focus is redirected in a different aspect of my life now.
So, how'd we do today?
We did good.
The Black Effect presents Family Therapy. Listen now on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back. And we do have to get to some serious news, which Jaquise just saw one piece of evidence from the very serious news we're about to talk about. That is, of course, all the headlines about the new horny Build-A-Bear. Mm-hmm. I'll just give you some samples. CNET. Build-A-Bear just launched an After Dark series of horny teddy bears. Fatherly.com, where I always go for my, I don't know what takes. Yowza! Exclamation point. Build-A-Bear launches a horny teddy bear line. Build-A-Bear launched a range of horny teddy bears, and we're confused, says Indy 100. And then the New York Post, raunchy new furry, in quotes, toys released just in time for Valentine's Day. So the one thing,
looked at all of these, by the way.
Yeah. So. The one thing that is actually horny about the entire thing is they did put out a fun image that is, I think it was like a promotional image. It's a stuffed lion in a like silk robe. Leaning on one elbow.
Very Tom Selleck.
Yeah, very Tom Selleck, very Burt Reynolds on a bearskin rug.
Oh.
And just kind of definitely giving you the impression that this stuffed lion wants to fuck you.
Oh my god.
This
rose over roses bear is killing me because she's just holding rose. Is that what the horny is? She's
yeah.
Alcohol.
An important detail is like they thought that these bears were so controversial that you have to go through like a parental like wall, like an 18 plus sight wall that says you're about to enter the bear cave. There's adult content in here. And you click through and it's like a bear that's wearing a t-shirt that says like wine mom or something like that.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? Like, I'm sorry. If these bears were actually horny, we would have heard about it on Tucker Carlson the next day. Mm-hmm. Okay. They did not go hard enough. If I'm going to buy a horny bear, I want strap-ons. I want
Give me a bear with a fleshlight.
I want piss pools. I want nipple clamps. Okay. Yes. Ball stretchers. I want niche sex toys on all of these bears. Okay.
Yes. Yeah.
If the bear is horny, let's just go ahead and say what we're saying. We gotta fuck this bear. And I can't fuck this bear.
Yeah. That's right.
I can't fuck this bear. This is wild. I love this. I love this, by the way. Like I said, this is the first time I saw the headline. I did not see the pictures. These pictures are very funny. I thought it was going to be something risque, like nipple titties out or, you know, showing hole or something. I didn't know what.
Hole?
I didn't know. I guess that doesn't make sense because they still got to sell these to fucking kids.
Right.
But,
yeah.
What world? I feel like in the 90s, if a brand would have did this, it would have been more horny. But we as a collective society are hornier than ever. Like, I see so much sex on Twitter and Reddit and OnlyFans. And like, we horny as shit. Mm-hmm. It's more comfortable. And this is what you come out with? You could have did better than this.
Yeah,
I should at least see some bear cleavage.
Right. The actual products are a teddy bear with sunglasses on and a dad t-shirt that says, I want to take you out. Which is also not...
Ooh.
Like now, that's
hold on
what,
now. Hold on, like he's gonna something. Like he's gonna kill me?
Right. Yeah. Like there's a whole exchange in Pulp Fiction about how ambiguous that phrase is.
Now I do like that. Take you me out. Yeah. All right, daddy.
Yeah, right. Like maybe they are like leaning into the threatening aspect of that phrase, and that's why it's being included here. But then the other one is it's wine o'clock somewhere, and it's just a stuffed teddy bear? Is that a teddy bear? Or is that a lion?
I don't even know.
I can't see that one.
This is just a testament of the fact that there is an untapped market for horny bears, okay? And we want teddy bears in full leather gear in like sex slings, okay? Mm-hmm. And I feel like there's someone out there to do it. And if you want to hire me to consult, I will gladly be a part of that project. So let me know.
Friend has volunteered themselves to bring us to the new frontier of horny animals, baby. And you know what? I'm here for it. I am here for it. Also, if I gave this to a date, like if I gave one of these horny bears to a girl for Valentine's Day, be like, hey, baby.
Right.
I love you. You looking good. Mm.
Here's what I think of you. It's 9 o'clock.
My dick gonna be dry the rest of the night. I'm not kidding. You ain't getting no ass after you. Right. Like, you even build a bear? I'm 35 years old, motherfucker. What you giving me this for?
Is the idea to maybe like make it a date night thing that people can go and do? But yeah, I mean, these are available for online orders, so I guess not.
I think it's for what's the religion or the people that get a year to like go explore the world before they come back.
Oh, a gap year.
Yes, man.
A gap year. Oh. Yes, man. No, it's like a religion or something.
Right.
Amish people.
Right.
Mormon, one of the,
I think this is for them.
Yeah, this is...
to ease them in slowly.
Their year of ease. When they go sidewaysing. They have a year of absolutely abhorrent, godless, heathen behavior. And then they go back to Mormonism.
This is for them. This is to ease them into, you know, the rest of the year that they're going to have.
Also, Build-A-Bear had the same promotion last year, and it prompted similarly confused responses from people. So it's just, you know, clickbait. It's mainstream media clickbait, essentially. Mm-hmm. Also, the 18 plus warning may be just on all parts of their site because they don't want kids grabbing their parents' credit cards and ordering like a dump truck full of custom made teddy bears.
Mm.
So that also might just be a misunderstanding by the mainstream media to, you know, try and write some comedy, try and spice things up a little bit. Let's talk really briefly about Mouse, which is now a bestseller thanks to a Tennessee school county's ban. So the pretext for banning the book was that it had nudity, technically illustrated animal nudity and bad language, which included the words bitch and goddamn. Ooh. It was the anchor text for an eighth grade module on the Holocaust. And the you can actually look at the minutes of the school board meeting devoted to this topic. And it's like worst thing you would expect. First of all, they get mad that the author had once done artwork for Playboy. So they're like, that goes on your permanent record. One board member called the book offensive and then admitted they had never read or even seen the book, but had read the reviews. They tried to see if they could just redact words from it. And then when they found that that was a free speech issue, they said, well, anyways, that wouldn't do. It's more offensive than that. I have not seen the book and read the book. I read the reviews. And then that was the only item on the school board meeting's agenda was what to do about Mouse. So the book skyrocketed to the top of Amazon charts, dominating online book sales. Top three literary graphic novels were three different versions of Mouse. So our writer, J.M. McNabb, was pointing out that, like, you know, this isn't new, and it had, like, John Grisham, I guess, A Time to Kill was once put on a banned book list, and, like, that skyrocketed the sales of that as well. But the problem is that it usually hinges on, like, how profile an author is at the time of the challenge. So there's just, you know, warehouses of banned books that are written by people who don't have names that people are familiar with.
When a book is banned, are they saying it's banned from schools? Is that what they're saying? Or is it banned
schools and then maybe it's like restricted at libraries, perhaps, or
right, school libraries.
Some rent libraries.
Interesting.
Taken out of the curriculum.
I mean, banned books, they need to learn that they're just putting these books in business. Let me tell you, like that one children's book that's like, you know, Kimberly Has Two Mommies or whatever, is like one of the most sold children's books of all time because of, like, you know, culture wars, and like they're only putting these books on the map. And Mouse is like, isn't it a Pulitzer Prize winning book?
Yeah.
Like it's a gorgeous. I remember reading both of those books in college and adoring them. But also, I never learned as much about the Holocaust from like history as I did from those books specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that it's just a testament to the fact that people don't know what the fuck they're talking about. And also, honestly, like that, they just are so hypocritical because the Bible, that book is whack. Okay.
Like, the Bible is whack.
There's like just, it just like endorses slavery and like people having sex with their dads. And like, I just like, I don't know. Like that's a crazy book.
And there's a story in the Bible where like God tells all these people to like, because a few people fucked up in the town, God tells everybody, you got to move out of your town. Like, people who lived in the town their whole life, this was their home, and they just got to up and go. And God was like, and don't turn around and look back. You're telling people, like, to not look back at the place they've known forever. And the one person who did, he turned her to a pillar of fucking salt.
I remember like, that.
That is the most petty, violent, overreactive shit that I've ever read in my goddamn. Yo, don't look at your home you lived in for your entire life, or I'm going to turn you into
as
a
you're
pillar
hearing it
of
be
salt.
Destroyed by God. Yes. You're not allowed to look back and be like, "Whoa!"
Right? Oh, I just out of curiosity, like,
"Don't
damn,
look at me. I'm
loud.
Disgusting." That's what God said. Don't look at me.
It's you. It's funny too, because like I will happily admit that I am not a avid book reader, but so like keeping up with like the banned book list is never something that really clicks on my radar. But it doesn't make sense to me because, for instance, which is the reason why I ask, like, are they banned in schools? Because like some books, like you ain't reading 50 Shades of Grey in eighth grade. So like I get like not being able to read some books in school depending on what the content is. But the fact that they're like restricted in certain areas of the library or bookstores and things like that, you mean to tell me that like some of these like romance novels, these graphic novels, these violent things, I can just easily go up and down the library and get, but you're going to ban a book about the Holocaust? Like that does, it doesn't compute in my brain because it's not about banning things because they are graphic. It's about banning things because you don't want people to know shit, probably, you know, for the most part is what it seems like. And like, I haven't read this book, so I don't know the content of it like you all do, but I don't get banned books. We don't ban movies. We may slap a rating on them, but that's about it.
Oh my like, God. There's an amazing documentary about the rating system that and how the rating system was also invented by the same people that ban books. It's like these like conservative Christian moms that like decide, you know, whether a movie is, you know, PG or PG-13. I think it's called This Film Is Not Yet Rated.
It's not yet rated.
Ooh, yeah. I watch that.
It's strongly recommend.
Okay. I want to watch that.
Yeah. One of the best documentaries.
If, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. But yeah, and the specificity of the things they object to are, it's like they object to showing women experience pleasure. So like you can get away with a sex scene in which the woman is uncomfortable or is being assaulted, but you can't show the woman have an orgasm because that
is
makes...
Is this the movie rating?
I forgot about that.
Yeah, MPAA. Yeah. Because it's a bunch of old.
It's funny. I do know this. I've never seen this documentary, but like the word fuck, for instance, the difference between PG-13 and rated R, you're allowed 3 fucks, but as long as they're not sexual. Like, what's the fucking difference?
Exactly.
like, what's the difference between 3 fucks and 4 fucks? And what's the difference between if the fuck is not sexual or not? It's still fuck. It's still a word. Like, it doesn't make any sense to me. It's so funny.
It's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs.
Yeah. The fourth fuck is what pushes you over the edge.
Yeah.
makes you stop believing in God and the president of the United States.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, they're also talking about banning Judy Blume books in Texas. And that was my first indication that Judy Blume books were cool like that. And now I'm going to want my kids to read them at the very least. I probably won't read them. I feel like I'd feel weird about that. But yeah, I don't know. It's like I remember there is something powerful both about like the fact that books like can get away with more than like 3 fucks in a book without being banned, and like they don't have this rating system, and also like I don't know, there like the feeling of getting to choose whatever you want to read and like finding out that there is like authority that doesn't want you to read it is like one of the most powerful, like, I guess you could say like marketing tools, but like it's not marketing, like marketers don't use it. It's just like that makes you want to read the hell out of some books.
Yeah.
Literally, it's an amazing incentive. It's literally why I'm corrupted now. I'm a godless heathen because, you know, I tore through my local library after, you know, reading all the banned books I could get my hands on. I think that I'm almost glad that they're banning books because all it does, it makes kids want to read them more. So,
this one's cool too. Okay.
Yeah.
well, Fran, this has been such a pleasure having you on Daily Zeitgeist. Where can people find you, follow you, hear you, all that good stuff?
The pleasure is all mine. You can find me on social media at Fran Squishco, or you can just search my name, Fran Tirado, and it should pop up. But more importantly, listen to my new podcast, Like a Virgin, with Rose Domeu, an iHeart Radio sister, and you can listen to anywhere you stream podcasts, even Joe Rogan's Spotify.
That Rogan. Is there a tweet or some other work of social media you've been enjoying?
My favorite tweet as of late was, I'm into NFTs, non-binary femme tops, which is a little bit of a queer insider joke there, but all my exes really are NFTs if I've thought about it. So
there you go.
I guess that's maybe my tweet of the day.
Jaquise, as always, so wonderful having you as co-host.
You know it.
Where can people find you and follow you, and what's a tweet you've been enjoying?
You know, you can always find me in these streets as per usual. Follow your boy. I'm getting closer to that 10K the elusive 10K that I want. So, you know, go ahead and follow your boy and do it for Black History Month, y'all. If you don't do it this month, Just go ahead and admit that you racist. just admit it. Stop playing. Stop fucking playing. At Jackie's Neil on everything. Y'all know what it is. So, you know, I am one of the adults who watches Euphoria.
We exist. And
yeah, we exist. I was thinking about this earlier. Like, yeah, adults in our age range watch like movies centered around teens because we get it. Like, I mean, Euphoria is fucking wild, but we used to be teenagers and like we've gone past that phase. We can understand that more than I can understand watching a movie about 50-year-old white men. So I get like I get being a teenager. Like it's not that unfathomable. This is more like it is in one tweet and like they're mostly visual, but it's just been a bunch of tweets that I thought based off the last episode of. Yo, this was Rue in the last episode, and the picture is like a torn up fucking town or like buildings right. on fire. Yeah. Or like there's the Grim Reaper meme where he goes from door to door and there's a blood trail out of each door. And one tweet from Coralina Dean was like Rue making her rounds around Euphoria Town on a mission to ruin everyone's weekend. If you've seen this last episode,
oh my God.
You know the section that we're talking about. And she was fucking that town up. And it was a joy and so uncomfortable to watch. And I loved it. Like, I loved it. So that's what I'm talking about. That's the tweets. Jack, thank All you right. for having me. I appreciate you.
Appreciate you. You can find me on Twitter at Jack_O'Brien. Couple tweets I've been enjoying. Miles at the Superior Pink tweeted, "This can't be the future. Dippin' Dots was the ice cream of." And Sarah at Sarah AJ Cleary tweeted, I think this is a true story. John Waters just came into my cinema! Exclamation point to see Jackass! Exclamation point a film we aren't showing! Exclamation point. And then Dan the Rock Yang tweeted, "Big news! My bodega guy promoted me from boss to my brother." Which is just a big moment in any New Yorker's life. You can find us on Twitter at Daily Zeitgeist. We're at The Daily Zeitgeist on Instagram. We have a Facebook fan page and a website, dailyzeitgeist.com, where we post our episodes on our footnotes, where footnotes. We link off to the information that we talked about in today's episode, as well as a song that we think you might enjoy. And super producer Justin, do you have a song that you would like to send people to go check out?
Well, yes, I do, Jack. Since we have three people on this podcast with Chicago roots, Fran, Jacques, and I figured I would shout out a Chicago artist, Mick Jenkins, referencing a Chicago Bulls legend, Scottie Pippen. Check out this track. It had featuring an artist I put on last week, Serpent with Feet. You know, the whole song's a metaphor about how you need a partner in life and, you know, you can't just shoot all them baskets by yourself. You got to have support. And so this song has an incredible instrumentalism to it. It's got these really floaty keys that are grounded by this counter melody that's played on this guitar that really, really makes you relax and chill and ease into your night. So put this track on, Scottie Pippen by Mick Jenkins and Serpent with Feet, and you can find that in the footnotes.
Scottie, you tripping, if you're listening. You've been tripping lately, Scottie. Let me just go ahead and say that. You tripping, Scottie.
That is actually a lyric in the song. I've been, yeah, it's like, I've been tripping. I was pipping. I was bullshitting. You guys got to check this
there
shit
it is.
Out. Yeah.
By the way, I also have Chicago roots. When I lived in Kentucky, the eighth grade class trip was Chicago.
Wow.
We got to go to the Rock and Roll McDonald's and Medieval Times for Love some it. Reason.
Those are pretty much the only two things to do in Chicago. Well, now we have the bean. Now we have the bean.
Right, we have the bean.
A fucking chain restaurant they took us to. Anyways,
the Rock and Roll McDonald's where many high school students went after prom sometimes.
Oh yeah. We went.
Alright, well, the Daily Zeitgeist is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcast, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. That's gonna do it for us this morning. We are back this afternoon to tell you what is trending, and we will talk to y'all then. Bye. Here's something you might not know about wireless. Sometimes what you see isn't what you get.
But with Visible, what you see is what you get. Switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless visible. Get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon. Just $25 per month, taxes and fees included. Switch now at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets
and help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters every afternoon. I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen.
And I'm David Gura. Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.